Why Americans Keep Buying British Soccer Teams. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishour, in for David Brancaccio. Everton Soccer Club is based in Liverpool. It's part of England's Premier League, and it is owned, and its owner has agreed to sell the team to a group of investors based in Miami. This would not be the first transatlantic ownership of a British team. If approved, the sale would mean Americans own 10 out of 20 clubs in the world's most lucrative soccer league. Marketplace's Matt Levin explains why European football has recently become a preferred destination for Yankee capital.
Even though Marshall Lamb lives about 5,000 miles away from Liverpool in the San Francisco Bay Area, he is very much a diehard Everton soccer fan. Watches every game, knows the players, and can sing a fight song.
What the heck do we care? Because we always know it's gonna be a show when the Everton boys are there.
Like his fellow Evertonians across the pond, Lamb is mostly excited for new owners, as long as they're into it for the same reasons he's into it.
I don't think American investors need to be messing with any sports team unless they really believe in the team, the club, the history, and the fans. You know, English football is very different than American sports.
One key difference between European soccer and, say, the NFL is something called promotion. Basically, teams from the minor leagues can get to the major leagues if they win enough. To Jordan Gardner, that sounded like an investment opportunity.
The promotion system, you can buy the equivalent of a AAA baseball team and get it to the equivalent of the major leagues, right? And what comes with that is huge jumps in revenue, value of your club. So can, if done properly, be quite financially lucrative.
Gardner led an investment consortium to buy a Danish football team in 2019, got it promoted, and then sold it. He says a big chunk of American investors are coming from Silicon Valley.
I think tech looks at sport in general, but European soccer is an undervalued asset class and something they can bring in expertise and know-how and add value.
Like any investment, there's risk, too. The three teams at the bottom of the Premier League standings get relegated, dropped to an inferior league. As of right now, Everton is in the relegation zone. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
Poverty and climate change. Two big problems countries are tackling at a global level. Climate Week NYC is just about to wrap up. Climate experts, diplomats, business leaders all gather to talk strategy for countering human effects on the climate. And over at the UN General Assembly, poverty is the number one sustainable development goal that 191 countries have pledged to pursue. But are these goals at odds with one another? The McKinsey Global Institute recently published a report on this. And Anu Madgavkar is a co-author. She's a partner at the McKinsey Global Institute. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So the idea here is that lifting more people out of poverty requires more economic development, but more economic development requires more energy demand and could contribute to climate change. So are these two goals, ending poverty and stopping global warming, are they at odds?
Well, fighting poverty and fighting for the planet are, in reality, deeply interconnected goals. For example, if you mitigate climate change, you protect the most vulnerable and poorest communities. But there are tensions because economic development does mean that billions more people would consume energy, and that raises the ask on what we need to do for the transition.
What kind of investment is needed to close the gaps in, let's say, the next 10 years?
Well, we think on the poverty side, there's tremendous progress being made, and 1 billion people have exited extreme poverty, moving from a $2.15 daily consumption threshold to more like $12 per person per day, which is enough to give you a modest sense of security about meeting basic needs. That is a big gap. Some 4.7 billion people around the world are below that threshold today. And about 4% of global GDP would need to shift. And then on the climate side, it's very clear that we need to raise the world's level of spending on low emissions technologies of all sorts. And the shift there is another 4%. So all told, 8% of global GDP would need to shift to meet both these goals fully.
Are there any strategies that you would recommend for how to get all of that investment moving?
If you think about economic growth and productivity growth, that has the potential to create better paying jobs, people who are more skilled and can move into those jobs and raise their income levels. And growth also spurs R&D and learning on the technology front. So all told, these forces can actually bridge something like 2/3 of the economic empowerment gap and almost 40% of the net zero gap.
Anu Madgavkar is a partner at the McKinsey Global Institute. Anu, thank you so much.
Thanks. Thanks, Abri.
That report is titled From Poverty to Empowerment, Raising the Bar for Sustainable and Inclusive Growth. We have a link to it on our website, marketplace.org. Our executive producer is Kelly Silvera. Our digital producer is Dylan Mietinen. Our engineers are Jessen Dueler and Nick Esposito. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.